Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share, and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Greasers. Hope you're having an okay week. Hope you haven't got rained on when you thought it was going to be sunny and burnt when you thought that it was going to be rainy. It's been a confusing week, hasn't it? Always good to start with some weather chat. Just a reminder that Griefcast Live is coming up. It'll be tomorrow because this is released on Wednesday. I'm recording this on Tuesday night. And it is this Thursday, June the 6th, if you live in London, at the Udderbelly Festival. We're actually in the Spiegel tent. If you head to the Udderbelly Festival website, you can get tickets. I will be joined by Jeff Lloyd from Reasons to be Cheerful, Camille Youcan from the Birthday Girls podcast, and Josie Long from Shortcuts, BBC Radio 4 Shortcuts. If you haven't been to Live One before, it's a really nice, relaxed event. We just chat about death and funerals, but in a very relaxed, easy fashion. So I would love for you to join us. This week, I'm talking to stand-up writer and podcaster Sophie Hagen. Sophie won the Best Newcomer Award in Edinburgh in 2015. She's also been seen and heard on BBC Three, BBC One, Radio Four, Comedy Central. She started the original Guilty Feminist podcast with past guest Deborah Frances White. And now she has the incredible Made of Human podcast, which if you haven't heard is a really beautiful, beautiful listen where she just interviews comedians and lots of people, activists and all sorts of people about what makes them human. And she's a new one called Secret Dinosaur Cult as well, which is very, very interesting. And really exciting, she has a brand new book out. It's called Happy Fat, Taking Up Space in a World That Wants to Shrink You. It came out very recently. Leona Dunham has recommended it. And it's a really, really brilliant, interesting read. And, you know, she is a hugely interesting person and 100% worth listening to and following on all sorts of things. And she came in to talk to me about her granddad and just generally how she feels about grief and death. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with comedian, writer, podcaster and activist Sophie Hagen. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, I thought I'd remembered how to say hello in Danish. And you know what? All I can say is tak for mal.
Oh, that's a good one. I missed that in the UK because there's no equivalent of that.
Well, that just means thank you for my food, doesn't it?
Thank you for my... Yeah, but it's such a quick tak for mal. But you'd say it basically after if someone's bought your food, if someone's cooked your food,
yeah.
Served your food. But there's no...
Yeah, there's no equivalent.
I often start saying it. So I go, thank you... thank, oh yeah, and then you go, oh, thank you for cooking me this. But it's, it becomes this long, almost yeah. formal, I would like to thank you ever so kindly for providing food. Yeah. When Denmark is just like, oh, tak for mal.
Yeah, tak for mal. I know, I really like yeah. it. Yeah. The only other one that I know is hold kæft.
Also very relevant.
Oh, relevant. Which is very, is shut up.
Is right? shut up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. My mum's friend, my mum's like one of her oldest friends is Danish.
Oh.
And she had a daughter, has a daughter, and they would argue in Danish around me. So that's why I picked up hold kæft.
How does it sound to you?
I can tell you, it sounds like this. Like that. That's
sounds amazing. That is the strange, one of the strangest language experiences I've ever had of hearing how my language
yeah,
sounds. Because I felt like I almost understood it, yeah. even though there were no words in it apart from hold kæft.
That's what she oh, Claire. That's what Claire had always done, something. Claire. Hold kæft.
And so I sort of would,
I'd tune out, but I'd always be like, oh, she's done something bad.
Something yeah, there are some words that are the yeah. same. I need yeah. to be careful when I, you know, talk
yeah.
to, like on the phone. I'll feel too free when I'm amongst, even like British friends, I'll be like, yeah, yeah I'm just sitting here and he's so hot. And I'll be like, wait, let's be careful.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah,
some words
know.
Are...
You never know who's Danish around you.
You never know who's... I mean, I feel like I do. I feel like they're yeah, so yeah. easy to spot. I've done shows where I've been, like, looking over the crowd and I've been pointing to this little group of people. I've been like, you're Danish, right? They're like, yeah. You can just tell there's something...
That's what my mum's friend says. She sees them, yeah. she says, Danish.
Yeah.
Danish. And I mean, but to be fair, she says it every time.
Yeah.
So then you're like, well, we don't always ask. You know, you don't always find out the answer. But yeah, she swears. True. She's like, you can tell. You can just tell
there
about
is
them.
Something. There is
yeah.
something.
Wow.
It's hard to explain. It's like the clothes, the look, the...
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something about it.
So, Sophie, obviously...
Oh, yeah, death.
Yeah, yes. death. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
It's so hard for me because, like, I always have a nice chat with the guests and I should be like, sorry, just pulling into the second gear here. Who are we remembering today?
So it's a bit of a... I think that what I... Okay, so what I want to talk about, sure. I think, is my biological grandfather. But I kind of had to think quite hard about this because... Because he wasn't a good guy mm-hmm. in any
way. No redeeming features.
So it's sort of like, I, talking about him will touch upon grief, but I'm not that sad.
Yeah, that's okay. You don't have to be sad.
Oh,
no. Oh, yeah, no.
Good.
It's not a show. Like, people, I don't, you don't need to be like, and then they died. No, no, no. It's just your experience of it.
Well, I think it's just because, well, okay. So in general, I have something which the definition or the diagnosis seems to change according to which of my therapists I speak to. But I think it's called complex trauma or complex PTSD.
Wow.
Which basically... There's no way of saying basically about this because it's super complicated. It's in the word complex.
Yeah.
I am very dissociated, more or less at all times. So I flee from most feelings, basically. So my grandfather's a bit of a different story, but I've had two other deaths of people who I was to a certain degree close to. And I've never been to any of their funerals because my whole body and my brain... shuts down.
Yeah, yeah.
And just any kind of you might be sad, whoosh, it just goes blank and I can feel my body get physically cold.
Wow.
Almost as if I just completely disconnect and go,
yeah, yeah.
We're not feeling this.
Wow.
That
is common when it comes to grief. Like I've spoken to other people who just I think you almost go one of two ways. Like you almost sort of like feel it so raw that it's hard to process and exist. Or yeah, there's, you know, I remember the Mac Twins episode. One of them really felt it, cried, and the other one can't really tell you what happened for a year.
That's so interesting.
She's like, I can't remember it.
But that sounds like PTSD, which is the primary... I'm trying to remember all the words. There's like the primary PTSD, which is an event happens, and then you kind of go cold, and then at some point when your brain knows you're ready... You have a breakdown and you feel all the feelings.
Yeah, your brain's like, and now.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice, it's pure, it's easy to understand.
Yeah.
Complex trauma is, you know, instead of it being one thing happens and then later something else happens, it's a lot of things happen, a thousand things happen. Some are big, some are small, some are intense, some are deep, some are scary, some are... And then you're kind of in the middle of it and you're kind of... you know, just all these balls coming towards you all the time, and you're kind of trying to dash them away and ignore it, you know. So it's like a very, I want to say the word intricate, but I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. Like, yeah, it's like you can't sort of pull it apart and make it neat. It's like a cat's cradle puzzle. It's like it's all kind of like, oh, this is really, you pull one thing and then something else comes out. Yeah,
exactly. So it's not even just grief. It's basically all feelings.
Yeah.
It's all feelings that I somehow have to. Anger, general sense, happiness, sometimes love, intimacy. All feelings I'm kind of trying to... Well, I have two therapists now, so I am working on it.
She's putting the money in, guys. She's put the time in. She's
my
doing
God.
It.
And they know each other. They know about each other.
That's
I'm not
good.
Cheating on any of that. But like, I think that sort of has to... The reason why my grandfather is a good starting point or focus is because of the way my family is put together. Because at the moment, there's not a lot... Oh, this is going to sound so... There's not a lot of my family members... You know, my grandmother is 96 and very close to dying, and she's a psychopath. My other grandfather, I mean, he's not that old, but hopefully that'll happen soon. He's a horrible, horrible, abusive, horrible man. And I know this sound, and especially because people listening will probably have a relationship with grief and stuff, so I'm not talking about, you know, disregarding someone who was actually... This is like a... It's sort of the... It's, the question we have in my family at the moment is how do we react when these people die? You know?
But I think it's really important, and we do try and cover this on the show, and I think it's so important that grief... I think sometimes if you're not in the club, if you haven't experienced it, you can be like, oh, someone dies and everyone's sad. And if you don't have that reaction because of family relationships, you can feel very isolated. Of like, oh, I'm not allowed in the sad club because I hated them. And we have had a few episodes where people have had very difficult relationships with the parent or the grandfather, you know, or the sibling. And I think it's so important to talk about, because most relationships are deeply complicated and deeply flawed. And when someone dies, that does not disappear. You don't suddenly go, oh, well, now I feel fine about everything that happened. You're like, I'm still angry. I'm still pissed off. I'm still damaged. I'm still hurt. And they're not here.
Yeah.
So I can't tell them or shout at them or resolve it or talk it through. So I think it's actually a lot more common than the kind of... I would say I have like a handful of episodes where people are like, we had a really great time, they died and I was really sad, but I said I love you and they said I love you and it was wonderful. Like that, I would count them on one hand compared to
to the complex.
It was complicated, it was difficult.
Well, my third show was about my not the grandfather who died, well, I mentioned him as well in it, but the other grandfather. The first time I talked about him on stage and saying like how horrible of a person he was, a woman came up to me afterwards and she was like, my mother died. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry? And she said, no, she was a huge cunt. And I've just never been able to say that to anyone, because you have to be really kind about, you know, your family, and especially if they've passed away. And she was like, it was so refreshing just hearing someone say those things.
And I think it's really, some people are cunts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some people are. And when they die, that doesn't stop them being cunts.
And the complexity of once you were a child and you didn't know.
Yeah, you
didn't
understand.
You know, do you grieve for what the child has lost?
Yeah, that's really hard.
You know, so my mom is, you know, where I obviously have learned most about my emotions from. And she's not had an official diagnosis because she's never sought it. But she's most likely autistic. Mm. Secondhand diagnosis from a lot of therapists, but she's never actually had it officially. But we had a chat when I was home the last time, and she was like, she's so rational about everything and has no sense of timing or, you know, social cues. So I was like having a great time doing some work, and she suddenly went, I will not go to my mother's funeral. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a big, that's a huge, first of all, she's not dead yet.
Yep.
Also, okay, let's have this discussion. I'll just pack away my stuff and tell people that I need to go for a bit. What? And she was just like, well, you know, she was not a good mother to me. So I don't think I will go, because it doesn't change that she is dead.
Yeah.
So why would I go? She will be dead. It won't matter to her.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is so tricky, because... You know, what is the right answer? I want to be like, but you need to say goodbye. And she was like, but I will not say goodbye, because I can say goodbye within myself at home. I'm like, okay, yes. Also, maybe she is right.
Yeah.
Is the whole idea of funerals silly? Is it, how do you react in that situation? I was like, it was so tricky because I don't have the answer. She was meant to be the one who gave me the answers at some point.
I
can't help you, Mom.
I think it's so personal. It's so personal, and I think it so depends on what your relationship, but if it was deeply complex and deeply traumatic, I think it's very understandable. You're like, being at a funeral is not going to change that. If it might, I would say, if it might help you.
Yeah.
Like if you would feel like, because they're dead.
Yeah.
There's no helping them.
Yeah.
But if you personally would gain something from going to a funeral, of being like, actually being in that moment, thinking about a relationship, crying, grieving the person I don't have, that might help, then sure. But if not, that's okay. Like, there's no rules to these things. So,
we only ever went to that one funeral, which was my grandfather's.
And what was his name? Let's just get his name.
Oh, his name is Sven.
Sven, of course. Of course.
Sven.
Sven.
So the sort of funny, dramatic story is that he was married to my grandmother, Inger. Inger and Sven.
Oh, perfect.
And they had four children, a mom, her sister, and her two brothers. And Sven was very physically abusing, so he beat up the children quite harshly. My grandmother then did nothing to stop it. And that's not... We know enough about women in abusive relationships and how it's not easy to
leave and or to stop someone. As well.
And the time as well. This must have been the 30s, the 40s.
Yeah, no one was like, people shouldn't do that. People
you're an independent woman.
No, they were like, he should probably hit them. That's normal.
What have they done to deserve that? Exactly. But then what my grandmother did do was when this hot younger piece of ass moved in across the street.
Yes, please.
She started having an affair with him.
Wow.
Ip was his name. I-B. Ip. And he was a trucker.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is quite David Lynchian in a way.
Yeah,
like, I really feel like I can see this, like in the Midwest version of this. Yeah.
Only it's a very little, like, cute suburb.
Yeah.
So she started having an affair with him and eventually left her husband for him.
Wow.
To live in a camper van.
Oh, camper van, yeah.
For, I don't know how many years. And my mom at this point was, I think, 14. And she was the youngest.
Wow, so she left the kids with the dad.
Yeah, but they must have been a fair bit older, so they must have been like teenagers.
Right, okay,
so I think by then she was like,
all right.
They obviously all have now.
My job here is done, guys.
Yeah, they have complex lives and issues now.
Yeah.
All of them. And, my mom is weirdly the most functioning of them, which is saying a lot. So she left with this new guy who then, and I think some of it must have been because he wasn't physically abusive, but he was emotionally.
Okay, yeah.
Like torturous, like horrific. So she's been with him ever since, and he's 13 years younger than her. So they moved around quite a lot. He was also an alcoholic, and he was very, very mean to my mother. And she obviously has this blame of, why did you put me in a camper van with this horrible human being? So my biological grandfather, Sven, when he was left, he was very shocked.
He
didn't know what to do. So he ended up marrying a woman. I think she was called Anna. That's a very lovely woman. And he, from what I understand, he became very soft after that. Very gentle and just almost like this broken man who was now going to be really nice to his wife because if she leaves too or whatever.
Yeah, he learned his lesson.
Yeah, okay. But by then, a lot of the damage had been done. My mother then, when she got pregnant with me, she moved to this tiny... So this is all in Sjælland, which is like the part of Denmark where Copenhagen is. So east. The east of Denmark. In the south of Denmark is like its own little island, Funen. And this makes sense if people look at the map. I don't imagine people know just how Denmark looks in their heads. So my mom moved like far away to live near my grandmother and her husband, my step-grandfather. For the first 10 years of my life, for that time, she didn't really speak that much to her biological father, biological grandfather, Sven. But then when she realized that my step-grandfather was abusive and horrible to me and my sister and her and everyone, she then moved back to the town where Sven still lived.
Right, okay.
So from then on, we kind of started seeing him.
Right, he became, a part of your life.
Yes, but not a lot. Like, I have these vague memories of... he lived between where we lived and the local gym. When I went to badminton or when I went swimming or when I went to the fitness center or if I went to watch football, like that whole area, you had to pass his house. So sometimes I would stop by there and get some sweets or get some money or just like say hi. But I don't have many actual memories. I have a memory of his car and the smell in his car, this old, old green car. And he had a very specific kind of Danish sweets called something like kongebolsje or something, like a king. That is very sweet. And that's sort of my only real memory of him. And then, so I was at work. I worked for the Danish Refugee Council. I must have been 21, 22. And my mother, again, probably autistic, no kind of understanding of emotions and how they work. She texted me at work. She was like, I don't know if it was that he died or if he was going, I think he got cancer. And she messaged me, hello, your grandfather's going to die. And then she wrote, but that's not something we should pretend to be sad about.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I was just like,
a lot to unpack in a text message.
Right. And I was like, oh, this is so classic her. Of like, right, okay, I guess I need to now just sit for a bit and try and think this over. Because that's very much how she, you know, in her mind, you know, my sister lost her, she didn't even lose her rabbit. There was like a risk that she would lose her rabbit at some point. And my mom was just like, well, you have not cared for it for a bit. Someone else has been looking after it. So you cannot care about it. So of course you are not sad about this.
Wow.
My sister was like, well, I am sad about it. She's like, no, you cannot be sad about it. You are pretending. Because actually, you have not seen it for a few weeks. And if you really cared about it, you would have seen it more often. You know, there's this trying to make feelings logical. So she was like, you have not seen your grandfather for many years. And he was not a nice person. So you are not sad about him dying. And it's such a complex...
Yeah, because I'm human, so I will be. Because I'll think, oh, but he's me and he's my blood relation. That's weird.
Yeah, there should be... I've met him before.
Yeah, and I know who he was. And also, that means I will die and everyone will die. Like, that's the sadness. Even if you don't know someone, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Because that's also like saying you could watch, like, you know, a terrible thing on the news and be like, well, I don't know any of those people.
Yeah, or just you know, it's not like she doesn't cry at movies. I'm like, you did not know Tom Hanks, mother, so why are you crying at this?
Yeah.
It's a very good and a very bad thing at times.
Of course. And obviously, it must be difficult for her because the world doesn't act like that.
But she also has the confidence of someone who's like, well, everyone should be like this. This is what makes the most sense. I'm like, yeah, sure.
So you get this text message.
So I got this text, and I think he died a few days later. And I didn't really know what to do with it, which is sort of how I feel about, about most feelings. Mm. I had this very intense, strange therapy session last week where we were talking about rejection and humiliation. Mm. And I was going through some times in my life when I've been rejected, and I was telling her how, like, it doesn't bother me. Like, I never really care. Mm. If anything, it kind of energizes me. I'm like, oh, I don't care. This is amazing. And she was like, no, you care. And I was like, I'm pretty sure I don't. And she's like, no, because it hurts to be rejected. You feel humiliated. Mm. She was like, this is how you feel when you are rejected. And she did an act out of being rejected. So she went full, like, her face got all scrambled up, and she was like, oh no, I can't believe they said no, oh, this hurts so much, oh no, who will they tell, oh no, who will people find out, this is so embarrassing. She did this whole act out, and I was just staring at her like, wow,
that's what it looks like.
Is that how you're meant to do this? And I've been thinking about it for a week now, like, wow, so that's how I'm meant to be processing feelings and acknowledging them.
Yeah, it's difficult. My therapist always says that. She's like, you know, there's a normal level of anxiety. And I'm like, I do not know what that is. Like, so it's really confusing to me. She's like, well, like, you know, a person with normal levels of anxiety might feel like this. And I was like, well, I've never, ever felt like that. So that's like saying, well, a Danish person would say this in Danish. It's like, well, I can't speak it. So I don't know. So it means nothing to me. She really likes to make me think about it, though. But yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're meant to do. Annoyingly.
But I think that's interesting because, like you said, you know, you're saying about your mum and the people who you were growing up around, like, I think emotion you have to sort of be taught it.
Yeah.
So if you haven't been taught it, and I think this is the problem, like, I think some parents maybe like happiness is something that maybe it's easier to express sometimes, or sadness, but I think when it comes to death, a lot of parents don't know how they're supposed to feel. Like, no one knows, because we don't talk about it, so there's no practice. You don't get to be like, oh, I see, this is how it feels, and this is that. So everyone's just like, oh, they died. So I can understand being like, right, okay, now what? So yeah.
And it's sort of the same. So when the two, I could think the main death that actually, I was going to say bothered me. That almost sounds like it's like an annoyance, doesn't it? That just shows where my brain goes.
Like once. Got to you, yeah.
Yeah, or at least should have gotten to. There was, it was a promoter here in the UK who saw me do this horrible showcase, this like an international showcase. And I had just moved to the country. This must be 7-8 years ago or something. And he was, I latched onto him from the beginning. And he latched onto me and he was just like, I will show you the world. I will take care of you. I'm going to make you a star. And we had all these meetings and he was just like, he taught me all these things about comedy and authenticity and showing your soul on stage and taking risks. And like he was teaching me how to do comedy in a way that I've never had anyone say before.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just so, he was just like, right now you have to send me this long email about all of your pain because we need to find out what your pain is. And it was so, I was like, yes.
Here is my pain.
Please.
Thank you.
It was so good. And then he got a brain tumor. And I think I always just thought, you know, it'll be
okay.
A few months or so. And then, you know, we'll start talking again afterwards. And then he died. And in retrospect, I just took what felt like a natural step back without knowing that it was not how people usually react.
Yeah.
You know, people would usually stay, you know, talk to them, help them, talk to their family, be a real person about things. But my logic was to go, oh, yes, okay, you're dealing with some things. I'll be over here until you're finished. Okay, thank you, bye. And then suddenly he had died. And I was, of course, invited to the funeral. And I was just like, there was just no way in hell I was going. I just could, like, the very idea, it was just not an option. It was just wasn't an option.
What, do you think you were afraid of going? Or was it just, it's just
absolutely.
Being at a
feeling
place.
The feeling. It's the, what's it called, like, dodging.
Oh, dodging.
When
you keep
dodging these, you know, so you never have feelings to feel, that come towards you. So, you know, it's like the same way I can have a crush on someone for 6 months and then when they turn around and go, yeah, I like you too, I'm like, okay, goodbye now. Goodbye forever. not doing this because now there's suddenly a...
Yeah, there's a chance this might be a thing I have to like actually...
I might have to feel something now.
Yeah,
you know. So
yeah.
I had a boyfriend for a week and then I started getting nosebleeds. I had like nosebleeds that lasted for 6 hours at a time. And I was
I'm
going to die now because of this relationship.
Oh my God, sorry. Bless you. Maybe he wasn't right. If he's causing nosebleeds, it might be in your body being like, this is not the one
not
for
the
you.
One.
Your nose is like, no way, it smells bad. Not for us.
It smells bad.
We can sense it. But I think that's, you know what, it's surprisingly common. And that's part of what this this show highlights. Like so many people on like the Twitter will be like, friends stepped away from me and I couldn't believe it. But I think if you haven't been, and this is the thing, like I was, like we call it the club, but like I was joined the club very early. So when you join something at 15, it becomes normal. That is my normal, is that people die. Like that's very much my normal. So if a friend told me they had a brain tumor, I'd be like, oh, you're going to die.
Yeah.
So I need to spend quite a bit of time with you because our time is limited. Now, the trouble with my brain is that they might be like, I've got a headache. And I'd be like, it's probably a brain tumor and you're going to die. So, and then when people are like, no, it's actually not a
can
big
I just
thing.
Live?
And I'm like, no, I planned your funeral. And I'm ready and I know what I'm going to wear and I know what I'm going to say. And I'm here for you. I'm so intense. It's so much when life isn't actually death.
Is that your defense? Is it a way of being like, you know, the way when some people are really sad, they say, I'm fine?
I think it's a way of being in control of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, because death is, even though I'm, you know, au fait with it, it's still terrifying. So I think I feel like, right, you're dying. I'm here. I'm on it. I'm going to get every moment out of this. We're going to do it together. And you're going to die properly. Yeah? I'm not going to waste any of this death.
Just so, them trying to turn off the life support machine desperately. Oh, please
quietly,
don't.
Like, no, we're going to make sure that you've said everything. You've felt everything. We've done this together. Because I think I didn't do that with my dad because I was 15. And so, you know, it's very difficult. And I felt like the way you're describing it's often how I felt. I was like, I don't have the vocabulary. Like, I definitely felt things, but I was like, I couldn't tell you what I was feeling because it was just like, it's so overwhelming and so massive. So I think the stepping away is surprisingly common because people just don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's so just pure panic.
The panic, and I think having done a show in Sweden about death, I wonder if Denmark has a similar thing of it's quite similar to England. That there's a slight sense of the polite thing to do is to leave people to it. Like slightly,
I think that's
like
the reaction with most things in general.
Yeah, like I won't bother you.
It's one of the most. I don't remember the place. Like one, first, second, third, or fourth country in the world in terms of being the hardest place to make friends in.
Yeah.
You know a lot of people who are like, I'm going to move to Denmark. It's going to be great. And then after 6 months, they're like, I've still not spoken to anyone. No one wants to speak to me. This is horrible.
Yeah.
That's it's a very private, very...
That's what they were saying in Sweden, that they're very shy and that it would be rude to be like, oh, so your so-and-so is sick with cancer. How can I help you? We'd be like, oh, that's very rude.
Yeah.
I'll let you get on with it.
Yeah.
And then when it's done, you know, we can say, hope you're okay. And I think that's quite British as well. There's definitely, we have a sensibility of like, I don't want to intrude. It's a very sort of common old
But also you have
phrase.
This whole suppression of all emotions as
oh,
well.
Yeah, yeah.
So like you're not going to just...
on top of grief.
The fear of someone going, yeah, actually I'm really sad. And then they start crying. It's like, whoa.
That's the worst thing that can
back
happen.
Away, back
yeah,
away, back
yeah.
away.
That's, so I think what you're describing is surprisingly common with death as well.
Yeah.
I think people just think... I'm so worried about saying something wrong or being involved in a situation which I might make it worse, or I don't know what to do, or I react incorrectly.
Yeah.
So I'll just back away, because then I won't do anything wrong that way, because I'm sort of over here not doing anything, and that's safer than doing it and getting it wrong.
I read a book by someone, and they had described how they had had cancer, and they were describing that. And part of the book was, it was not a good book. I mean, bless this person for writing this book, it's fine. But there was a whole segment about how people had reacted wrongly.
Yeah.
And there was a big segment about how he had, someone had texted him, how are you? And he was like, well, I just had cancer. And the guy had said, oh, okay, well, yeah, I mean, I had a headache and that was also really bad. And then he was just like, how dare you?
Yeah,
And I understand the emotions. I understand you can be like, are you fucking joking me? Are you going to compare this to a, you know? But at the same time, I'm like, he answered you. You know, we're trying.
Yeah,
we're all trying. Can we talk about how utterly horrifying it is to not know what to say to these things?
Yeah.
And it was very, I mean, it's sort of how when I really appreciate my mother is like when I desperately do not want to feel, she's very good. Why would you? it was the first funeral I went to, and I don't even really remember why we went, my grandfather's funeral. I genuinely don't know why. And it was quite obvious how bad of a person he had been, because the church was kind of almost divided into two. There was her, like his new wife's side of the family, and there were so many people, and they were crying, and they were really... really sad that he'd gone. There were all the people who'd met him once he'd become a soft, nice guy. And then it was just empty where we were sitting. It was like me and my mother, my sister,
so weird.
Some lady that we weren't really sure who was, and that was it. And they were clearly they didn't like that almost none of his children were there, and then people didn't seem to care. But we kind of knew. And it was very strange because we were just sitting there and there was a moment, so there's a Danish song called Er du dus med himlens fugle, which means, are you dus with the birds in the sky?
Aww.
Are you friends with the birds, basically?
Nice.
So it's this whole song about, you know, nature and animals and how it's all lovey-dovey. And one of the things that my grandfather did when he was still alive and when back before my grandmother left was one of my mother's most vivid memories from that time was watching him kick her dog to death. And it was one of the stories of how how much of a piece of shit this guy was. And she would tell us the story quite whenever we talked about him. And then we were sitting in this church, and it was, you know, obviously so much tension, and you know, all these people were crying, and you know, he was in this casket, and the priest did the eulogy, and then he introduced the song, and it was that song. And I just could, it was like all of the tension and all of these emotions I was trying to run from became laughter.
Yeah, of course. It's funny. That's just like, so what funny. Else can you do but laugh at that?
It's like, was so funny. And I couldn't, I just couldn't. My mom never laughs. And even she was laughing. And we were just like, this is the worst. I'm a bad person.
Like,
a bad
of all person. The songs to have chosen, that is of the worst song the for songs. That person. Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I said it to my mom, and this is why I brought it into my show as well. So it's a bit, I hate it when people retell. I'm not telling this the way I'm telling it as a joke. I just changed it to another song. But it is true that when I then said it to my mom, when I was like, can I tell this story on stage? I told her like how I was going to tell it. And she, of course, doesn't laugh at anything. but then she did kind of start to laugh a bit, and I was like, what? And then she told me about how she had been, like, when he died and when they'd done all the arrangements and, you know, who gets what and all these things with his wife's new family. And they had gotten together to figure out what songs to sing.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was like they had suggested that. And she'd been like, yeah, do that. And then she was just laughing. She was laughing. She was like, hey. Like, she totally planned for that to happen.
Oh, wow.
She was like, that is really funny. And I was like, I guess it is.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
After that funeral, me and my sister were just walking around this church, churchyard, and then we started crying. And we were both a bit, you know, like we were making all the crying motions. Like, there were tears, there was all the weeping, but we were sort of looking at each other like what is happening? Why are we doing this?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we couldn't really figure out, you know, logically, which is what we've been brought up thinking, why are we crying? We should not be crying. We did not like this man. You know, this is not an event where we should be sad.
Yeah.
So it was this very strange outpour of emotion that we couldn't rationalize.
But it's a bit like you said in the church, like, often it's not funny, often it's the release of the tension. And that's why when your people are dying in hospitals and hospices, like, weird shit happens and you just start laughing.
Well, my other friend who died also of a brain tumor, he was a comedian, and Chris Joyce, I don't know if you ever met
him. No,
I think there will still be some videos of him on the internet. He was very, very funny. Very great guy. The first time I ever met him was at, like, the comedian's Christmas party, open micers Christmas party, where I'd just been, like, trying to see if I could snog as many comedians as possible. And then at the very last thing of the night, I never met him before. I was really drunk, and I pointed at him and I went, "You're my boyfriend." And he went, "Yes. I'm so happy we met." And then we went into this weird, like, role play thing, and it was just so funny. He was so funny. And then he got a brain tumor, and he had been told he had 2 years to live.
Wow.
And then he wanted to go to Edinburgh and call his show My Penultimate Show. I was like, that is so fucking funny.
That is so good.
He never got to do any of them, but I was like, that's
perfect.
So funny.
Yeah.
That is the perfect thing to do.
It's perfect. And that's what I meant thinking about the crying in the churchyard, of like, often it's just like, emotion's just emotion, I think, and it's either directed into all these different like boxes, and sometimes you laugh and sometimes you scream and sometimes you cry, just because I can imagine it's, even though you didn't like him, he's still your grandparent, he's still a person, it's your own mortality, and often it's the loss of the person, like I'm assuming, like, was it weird looking at the other side of the church and being like, why didn't I get that granddad?
Yeah.
Like, how come this is happening?
Yeah, and why couldn't you have been
Great nice guy? Yeah.
I think there's often in people who've been traumatized in some kind of family way, you do sometimes get this, and it feels like almost a childish feeling of, like, you want to stomp the floor and be like, oh, why was that what I got?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, but I think you can only react the kind of age you were when the trauma happened.
Yeah.
Because that's when it kind of got fused in your brain and branded. And that's what I have with my dad's stuff. It's like I often react like a teenager because that's when all that emotion hit me or the trauma happened. So it's very easy for me to be like, fuck you guys, fuck the system and fuck you all. Like that's my automatic go-to. And I think if you were a child or whatever age you are before you're sort of an adult, you know, when you sort of, it's harder to tell the difference between you at 25 and you at 30, I guess. Although, you can, but it's more distinct in charge. So you react that way if you did at the trauma because you still feel it the way you did when you were 10 and it was being explained to you that this person's been a shit. You're like, well, it's not fair. Yeah. Especially seeing them all crying and genuinely obviously they were genuinely sad he was dead.
But also my go-to reaction because of my mother is rationale, so I'm kind of, my instinct is to be like, why are you all crying? He is dead, it does not change anything, this kind of in unhuman thing.
Yeah
I was just being like, but there's
no
reason,
isn't it? I suppose rather than unhuman, because it's just,
yeah, but it was like what you said about, well, because I'm human. You can't approach emotions with
It's sort of what makes us human in a way, isn't it?
Like, we're not robots. Yeah. Trying to figure out the maths behind why we're reacting certain ways. Mm. And I'm kind of, I realized it was like the therapist that I just left a few months ago. She, every time I was near crying, I could see she got really excited. She was like, yes, go on. Yes. Oh, so how did that? Oh, that must have been really hard. And I was, in my head, I was like, right, okay, she's not going to win. And it took a few sessions, and then I was, like, close to crying. And then, of course, all my, defense things kicked in, and I was like, oh, not going to cry anyways. And I just went, ha, I won. And then we had to have a long chat about how I don't win by not crying. And it's not a competition.
It's
her job.
But you totally won.
She never saw me cry. So now I'm paying for two therapists.
So you won that round.
Yeah.
Whether you win the game, that's up to you.
Oh, yeah, no, totally lost that. It's paying too much money for people to teach me how to cry, for me to sit and make it a win-win.
It is hard, though, and I think it's hard if you don't naturally express yourself in that way, if it hasn't been taught to you, it's not something in your, your tool belt almost. And then when you are confronted with death, it's like, oh, well, I see films and I see other people crying. That's obviously what I'm supposed to be doing. And if you don't feel that, which often so many people don't, they don't feel, I don't feel like, and oh, well, I'm sad. I mean, I was definitely sad my dad died, but we had a really complex relationship as well. So I didn't, sometimes I remember like people would talk about like, oh, and you've lost your daddy. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
I lost my dad. Like, there's a difference. And I had a very complex relationship with my grandma, who actually died not that long ago. She was a sort of last one standing. And I don't know if you have this, like when people talk about like their nan.
Oh,
do you know the word nan?
Yeah,
it's like
nan
is like, when people have a nan, they seem like, they know them. They talk to them like a real member of their family. And
they cuddle up to them.
Yeah, they give it up and they're like, oh, my nan. And I think I would always, not jealousy, but that sort of confusion of like, oh, I don't know what it's like because I had a grandmother.
Yeah.
She was a grandmother.
Yeah.
And as if, as if she was from the Victorian times. Like it was very formal, and very bizarre for all sorts of reasons. And yeah, I guess that's what you're looking at. Is like they're talking about like little granddaddy, aren't they? Like, and you're like, that's Sven.
The dog kicker.
Yeah, the dog. God, yeah. Jesus, that's...
It's really dark. It's really grim.
It's really,
really
grim.
And then you cannot blame... I've often had the chat with my mother about if it's autism on that, because obviously she's not been officially diagnosed. And she's like, well, we can't know if this is autism or if it's trauma.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's a very good point. Because it could be, you know, if you're 5 years old and you see something like that, you know, no wonder you're going to make sure that you don't feel.
Yeah, because
you have no access to feelings.
Might get kicked to death in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't really. That's also why I do need to cry in therapy, because you do need to kind of rip that out.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I mean, what I find very fascinating is when you do talk about death and loss, it's often in retrospect.
Mm.
So my dad left when I was, well, he left when I was a baby, and then he came back and left again. Oh, so much fun.
Thanks,
just
guys.
To make sure I knew what I was losing. And
this is what you're missing. Oh, I see. Thank you.
And then he just kind of, he didn't even have the balls to stay away completely. He would then come back every once in a while, and you'd see him for a few weeks in the summer, then not at all for a year. So it was just like, it took me many, many years to let the dream go that he was going to be a father.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, of course he's had a traumatic childhood as well, blah, 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 blah. But at some point last year, he told, I've not spoken to him for 3-4 years now, he told my sister that he'd been to the hospital and it wasn't looking good, or it sounds like there's something up and that it wouldn't be unrealistic to think that he might die at some point. And it's really messed with my head, because all you hear about loss is I should have done, I should have said, we should have patched things up before. And then there's this feeling of, yeah, but should I try?
Yeah.
You know, should I go back to being 14, trying to force a relationship out of this guy who might want it, but might be incapable of doing it?
And yeah.
It's such a hard, you know, knowing it now, because usually people are like, oh, I wish I had known that.
Yeah,
you know, now I might be in that, for some people might say it's a fortunate situation.
Yeah.
That I have a warning and I can do and say all the things I would have said if I had the chance, but do you know what I mean?
I do. I think it's really complicated.
Yeah.
Because I think before I did this show and before I talked about it so much, I would have been someone, because of my experience, would be like, speak to him. It's never too late. You never know. So when someone dies, they really die. And I think that's, maybe this is unfair because people have different relationships with their grandparents, but when you lose a parent, you understand what forever means. It really is like, wow, that really is the end of the conversation. And that's very painful and very difficult to deal with. Having done the show and spoken to so many people and the different complex relationships and having friends who have complex relationship with their parents, I think it's not black and white. It's not simple. And it's a bit like we were saying about your mum and her mother's funeral. I think you sort of have to, when the relationship is complex, you have to be, it sounds selfish, but you have to think, well, what will I gain from it? Because you can't help them. You can't be like, you know, they are far gone in their trauma and their issues. That's kind of done. But you can protect yourself. So I think with something like that, like, it's great to have a warning. It's definitely better than not. And then, you know, you realizing, oh, shit, I actually did want to see him. Because this can make you think, okay, well, do I want to see him?
Yeah.
But then if the decision is no, I personally don't think people have the right to judge you on it, because everyone's relationship with their father and mother is so different.
Yeah.
And I think the only thing I'd ever say, I think what people mean when they say, like, you know, patch things up or take that chance, really what it is like, if there's something you need to say, you have to say it. And that doesn't mean positive. That doesn't mean patching
it up. Also, you don't want to burst into the hospital and go, by the way.
Yeah, true. But then they're dying. I'm like half joking. If you need to say, I mean, of course, if he's surrounded by people who love him, there's no point you barging in and be like,
thing.
When I was 13 and you didn't do this, and then I was 15 and look at this card, it was a piece of shit you sent me. Like, yeah, no. But if there is a line of communication, I suppose it's about having hope, isn't it? And it sounds like having hope with him is quite a dangerous thing.
Yeah, I feel like the hope would. And I think I have. There was the day before I moved to the UK, we went to see a thing together, another like attempt at making it happen. And I think I just said it to him. I was just like, oh, it really fucked me up that you weren't and aren't here.
Mm.
And I was just giving him all these examples of like, how do I trust that people don't leave? You know,
yeah.
how do I allow myself to feel like I deserve to be loved when you didn't and you were the only one who should have, you know? And then he said, and it's such a, it's hilarious when you think of it, him going, well, children don't know that there was meant to be a mother and a father, so how can they be affected when they don't have the father? Which is, there's a lot of problematic stuff in that sentence. But it's also just...
What?
Not right.
Say what?
I was like, what? You thought, yeah. What?
You thought I wouldn't notice? Because
yeah, he was just like, this is the logic. Yeah, that's why he, you know, you can see how he got together with my mom in the first place.
Yeah, yeah,
well,
they,
of course.
They got some logical stuff. Well, I like you, and
yes,
you like
course.
Me.
We should procreate.
And now I would like to leave.
And now I'm going. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much for procreating with me.
Okay, goodbye.
So, and as I said, well, children also, like, if you hit a child, they also don't know that that's not what's meant to happen. Mm. But you do understand that that hurts a child.
Yeah.
And then he was quiet for 45 minutes. it was like the first time in his life he'd actually had a thought. And he was like, oh, whoa.
Oh, I might have done something bad.
Yeah. Wow. And then we didn't speak about it until he invited me over for a barbecue. And it was from like 6 p.m. in the evening. And at one point I said something like, oh, yeah, I just need to be out by 11. He was like, oh, are you not staying? You're not spending the night? And I was like, oh, okay, okay. I've not really done that before. I guess I could. And then he talked for 8 hours.
Wow.
Just talked. I did not say a word. And after, I was so bored, after 5 or 6 hours, I was like, oh, these are all stories that have one thing in common. They're all stories that he thinks expresses that he likes me. So he'd be like, yeah, when you were born, I told my secretary to... And secretary makes it sound like he was like, you know, someone sitting in the office while he was building things, to contact me immediately so I could get on my bike back to your mother so I could be there for your birth. But then she hadn't passed on the message. So when I came back to the office, she said, there's a message for you. Your girlfriend is giving birth. And I almost punched her. And I was like, I was just like, what are you? Oh, that's you saying,
yeah,
I
look,
cared.
Yeah, look how much I cared. I didn't punch her. Like, and I really wanted to.
All
really
you need
cross.
To say is, how are you? I love you. That's
yeah.
all you need. You don't need 8 hours of every single story from when you have, then I once heard you on the radio and this is the following events. Wow. So I think that was my moment of, that's as much as he could probably give.
Yeah,
He could never, I cannot see him being capable of doing more than that.
Mm.
I think my fear in all of this is basically being, I think my, oh, this is going to sound really, it's not that I'm afraid of being my mother. Because if I ended up being my mother, I would be a very cool person. So that wouldn't matter. But I think I'm kind of scared that all of these deaths will happen. You know, my grandmother's there, possibly maybe my dad. And then I learned to unlock a lot of feelings in therapy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God.
Oh shit, guys, come back. I'm ready.
I'm ready now.
I got it. I can do it.
Yeah. Well, now I'm absolutely incapable of doing anything like that. You know, and, you know, that's not just grief. That's not just death. That's also the having a crush on someone.
Yeah.
They're into me. And then I go, oh, no, bye. I'll never speak to you again. And then suddenly I learn how to deal with feelings and intimacy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you're married now. No, okay, cool. Would you consider that? No, okay, that, fair enough.
Because I've really worked on a lot of stuff and I'm ready. I'm ready for you.
Yeah, but yes, you're right. I did. I guess it does look like I let you on for 6 months. Yeah, I do see that now. Yes, okay, yeah.
And that was hurtful. But now, look at me now.
But I'm really good now that I cry in front of my therapist.
And I don't punch the air and say I won. Like, we're really cool
accept
about it.
I accept a defeat now and it's okay.
Yeah, it's hard. I think, I don't want to say, like, as someone who's had to deal with, has crossed that door, I guess, when people give you that advice, it is just because it's such a, this is a terrible example, but I always use it. And it will only make sense to a small amount of people, but, like, you know when someone hasn't done Edinburgh Festival? And they'll be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get nominated my first year. I'm going to get it at Pleasance.
I'm going to do yoga every single morning.
I'm going to yoga every morning. And I'm going to go to bed at 9 and I'm not going to sleep around. And you have this like, uh-huh, mm-hmm.
yeah,
sure, babes. And you, there's no way you can say to that person, that's not how it is. You could sit them down with a lecture. You could record every adamant that's ever been and show them what will happen to them. They still wouldn't believe you. They still would be like, no, no, not me. Not me. Yeah. I'm not going to get stressed. I'm not going to read reviews. And I'm just going to have a really great relationship with my PR. I'm not going to do that. And I, you know, you encounter those people and you think, okay. And then you see them mid-Edinburgh and they're broken and they're pale and they just look like shit. And
you're
they're
like, welcome to the club.
You're like, welcome to the club.
Yeah.
And then the next year, they're, you know, that slightly cynical.
Yeah.
I mean, like if someone says they're going to do it, you know, they join you in that sense of like, you've been through this event. You now know what it means. And like, it's a terrible example, but that's how I feel with death sometimes. Of like, until you've been through the loss of that parent, it's really hard. Like, you can hypothesize all you like and you can have therapy all you like and you can be like, oh, I think I'm going to be this. But you never really know.
You never really know.
And that's where you just have to go with how you feel at the time. And if at the time it's like, well, I don't feel like having a relationship with them, then that has to be the right decision for now. Like, you just can't predict. And that's what's hard. Sometimes people in the club would be like, no, Sophie, we're the other side of the door. We think you should go and see your dad now. But like, we could still be wrong. You know what I mean? Like, it's so personal. And
is it because of the forgiveness thing, or is it the regret / forgiveness? Because do people have a warped relationship with the person they were once it's happened? You know, you know, when I called my, just to go back to the Edinburgh metaphor, when I called my agent a day after my first show had ended, the first Edinburgh had ended, and I said, so just, I'm just looking at next year's show, just wondering, can you be nominated for best show the year after you've won best newcomer? Just checking, I just wondered. And he was like, okay.
Okay, babe, sure.
And I'm trying to, like, now, I'm kind of forgiving. You're right, the metaphor feels weird, doesn't it? Do you think you have troubles forgiving that person that you were for not doing the things that you wish you had done?
Yeah, I think the only way I can think of framing it is the definition of forever. And I think until you've lost a parent or indeed a child or, you know, maybe a sibling, you think you know. So it's like, you think you know Edinburgh. Mm. You think you know how it will break you. Like, you think you know. And I've had this with friends who'd be like, oh, when my parents died, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, Like, you can totally hypothesize it and you can think how you're going to react, but you just don't know until it happens. And it could be that that's what unlocks you. Like, that's the thing that has to happen. And then suddenly, like, I think a lot of who I am now is fundamentally related to my dad dying at 15. I mean, I still would have been a bit like this, but I wouldn't be sat here talking about death all the time. I wouldn't be as empathetic as I've had to become because of the trauma that I went through. And so, yeah, it's, you know, the funny thing about life, like, you just can't tell. And I definitely think, to say it's about forgiveness, I think is too, this is the wrong word, but like almost like directive of like, it's not just that. It's almost exactly like what you said about complex trauma. It's not this, it's not that, it's all of these things.
Yeah.
And when they are not there, when they are really not there, and I think sometimes when people have had absent parents, they also think they know, like, well, they weren't there. It's like, it is different. It is different because dead is really the end of, there's no hope. There's not even 0.01% chance of this, that you could speak to them. And I think sometimes people don't realise that you can't pick up the phone. I can never have a conversation, ever. It's gone. And like, gone and forever are really, I feel like they're such visceral concepts that it's very hard to understand until you've
absolutely
gone through it, as a lot of things. So I think the element of forgiveness is definitely in there, that you want to forgive the person that you were or they were, and somehow find, there's definitely sometimes, you know, like a magical Disney world where like you say what you say and they say what they say and somehow it's perfect. But
and the connection, the difference between wanting to be a 30-year-old adult living on her own, having a great career, you know, saying, hey, listen, if I slept with someone and they got pregnant and I was not ready and they were my mother and were like, you will be home by 6 or you will never eat.
Yeah.
And I probably would have left too.
Yeah.
If I didn't have a say, you know, that whole thing of going, yeah, you know, you're probably real great company. You know, I'd love to hang out, have a drink with you. Never going to seek you know, any kind of compassion from you or interest or even what feels like love. But, hey, great guy, we can hang out. I get it now. I'm 30 with the 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 10-year-old, 14-year-old inside of you that's like, no.
Fuck you.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And you're like, what? So is there a part of, you know? And all of this, of course, boils down to control.
Yeah.
Because as you say, when it's done, it's done. Mm. And you do not have that control. But right now, maybe I'm attaching a lot to the control of I am not texting him.
Yeah.
I am the one that...
I'm in control of this relationship, which I wasn't when I was a child.
Yeah.
And so there he is wanting to talk to me and I'm not talking to him.
Yeah.
And what you have when they're dead is they don't care.
Yeah.
And that's such a change. Because my relationship with my dad was tricky and control and lots of aggression and tension about who was in charge and that sort of thing. And even if you're, I think sometimes when they're alive, you might, like you said, still be having a silent argument. Very quietly in the back of your head, there's this silent, yeah, well, I'm not texting you. And da, 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 da. And when there's no one to have that argument with, even though you might think, well, I'm not having it with him, but you are because you are this, it's there in the ether, isn't it? But when they're dead, it's just you. And that's, I think that's what people mean when they're like, try and speak to people, because what they mean is it's very lonely when it's just you.
Yeah.
But that's not to say, you know, that's not to say you should, because some people have done terrible things or there's no redemption or there's just nothing, there's no point to that conversation. And I can totally see that. But yeah, the control, I guess, yeah, it's really difficult.
You reach out and you're like, yes, okay, I'm ready.
Yeah, and then still...
and then he's like, who's this?
Yeah, new you phone. Know. Who did?
Yeah.
So you haven't. That's the only funeral you've been to, then, your grandfather's one.
Yeah, I think that's the only funeral I've ever been to.
And
my grandmother used to fantasize about it quite a lot. Not fantasize. No, that is the right word. From when I was very young, she would talk a lot about. She gave me a list when I was, I don't know, 8 maybe, of the songs you wanted sung at her funeral.
Oh, wow.
We would walk around the churchyard in the little tiny village she lived in. And there's the... Do you have that in the UK? The Grave of the Unknown?
Oh, like the Unknown Soldier we have? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Well, I guess in theory it's the same. So basically there's a... If you don't... If you're like... So if you're going to pass away and you have no one.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally no one. You don't want a gravestone because it won't be kept. You know, people won't give flowers and take care of it and stuff.
Okay.
So you can just have your ashes shatters in this bit of the churchyard. And then you just know that here are all the... Well, it's not the unknown, obviously, because people do know who they are, but you don't know where they are. It's just a common area. So my grandmother would always say that that's where she wanted to be buried, because she didn't want to be a burden on anyone to come and take care of. Yo, when I die, of course, you're not going to want to come by anymore and take care of my grave. And so I'm just going to be over here, the grave of the unknown. And then you never have to feel guilty about not taking, you know, that whole thing. And I'd be 8 years old, going, but I love your grandmother. I will spend every single day of the rest of my life by your gravestone crying. And so that was her whole thing, was this like dramatic martyr kind of, I will be in the grave of the unknown, so you never have to think about me ever again kind of thing. So you talk a lot about that. And she wanted me to do a speech.
Do you think you would do one now?
No, I don't think so.
Grandma.
It's kind of strange. Like I think I did one. Did I? I think I did one at her 92nd birthday. I think it's another case of me having spent a lot of years trying to make it something it's not, make her something, someone she's not.
Yeah.
Which I've basically done with all of them. Right, like my I try to make my mother understand feelings. I try to make my dad be a dad, my step grandfather to not be a psychopath, and her to kind of mean all of the big feelings. Because that's the thing about this kind of emotionless family, is that there are big expressions of feelings. You know, there's my grandfather like crying with no tears, like a really scary clown, and my grandmother saying these grandiose things, but. Again, what she's actually saying is, you probably don't love me enough. So,
yeah.
Another kind of emotional manipulation. So there's a lot of feelings that aren't, you know, you think there are feelings, but then actually not feelings. And then there's all the feelings that you then not allowed to or don't know how to express. So I think with my grandmother, I think I tried in her 92nd birthday to do like a speech that was going to be emotional and meaningful, but it was just an act, you know. Yeah. Even when I was doing it, it was just like reading a script and no one actually felt anything because you're just looking around the table and everyone's broken and no one's been taught, you know.
Yeah.
And then my grandmother went up to do her own speech and I was ready to be like, right, I'm going to be crying now over this because it's going to be so sad. And it was basically a 5-minute stand-up set. And now at this point I was doing comedy and I was just thinking, fucking hell, she's killing it. She was making jokes, like, not even knowing that that was what she was doing. And I was like,
if she'd been born 60 years later, she'd be like, get me to Edinburgh, guys. I got this. I know what I can do. That's so interesting, isn't it? I think it's so interesting because fundamentally what you're all of this is talking about is emotional connection.
Mm.
And if you don't have an emotional connection with people, it's quite hard to have any connection.
Yeah.
You know, because that's... You know, then they become commuters on a train of like, oh, hello, I'm glad you're fine. I'm glad you're not screaming in my face. But that's about as much as we need from each other, really. And yeah, I think it's really, interesting when it comes to grief of like so much of grief. I guess it's not fair, but like so much of what you expect from grief is emotional connection. And when you don't have that, the grief is...
Well, maybe that. Maybe the grief is the lack of emotional connection. Yeah. Like I'm at this... funeral, I'm meant to be sad. I almost wish I was sad because that would have meant that I had a relationship with this person.
Yeah.
So you're kind of crying for your tiny little cute child self who was just like, yay, mommy and daddy and grandpa and grandma.
Yeah.
And we're all a big, nice family. Everyone loves each other. And then that child then realizes that none of that is as simple as it should be or as, you know, that there
is. You think it should be, I guess, because I said there's so few people who actually... have that simple like family situation.
It should be if everyone had been psychologically healthy and we all live in the perfect
world. Everyone's mental health had been top form when they had sex and had children. It would have been really good.
I'd imagine that.
I know. It would be. But like my mum always says to me, she's like, you'll just fuck your kids up. You will fuck your kids up. She's like, you just don't do it the way you think you're going to.
Yeah.
She's like, you work so hard to not fuck them up this way. And then they turn around and they go, you fuck me up this way. And you're like, that's what you're
really
bothered about.
Yeah.
You're not bothered about the other thing we protected you from. Like, we were really working over here.
Do you not know how bad you could have been?
Yeah. And now you're bothered about this shit. Oh, okay. Fuck you guys. I think it's a really, it's just, it's a lot. It's life. It's very, it's difficult. It's difficult. And I think sometimes when you're grieving for the lack of relationship, that you have to kind of process that before you can grieve for the loss of the person. Because it kind of like, you can't grieve for... the grandfather until you grieve for we didn't have a relationship.
Yeah, definitely.
So you have to sort of grieve the loss and feel the pain of I wasn't able to have a relationship with a grandfather. I didn't have those nice... I don't have those memories that I see other people being like, oh, my grandpa. Like, and then you have to think, well, how do I feel about them as a person? And it's hard. It's just, like you said at the beginning, intricate and complicated, but it doesn't stop... Yeah, I guess that's what we're coming back to. It doesn't stop you having meaning, which I think is the nice thing. Like, you can find meaning in those relationships. You just have no control over
I don't them. Like not having control, though. I'm really into
I know.
Control.
Same. But I tell you what's really good for control is someone dying, because it really makes you go, that's the one thing in life you have no control over at all.
And you think you just accepted them? You're like, oh, okay, good.
No,
I'm so glad I realize now that I never can control anything. Anyone can die at any time.
And I think my control issues are worse because of it. But it's quite nice to have like a baseline example.
Yeah.
So when you are like, you know, and I have like obsessive thoughts and you're driving yourself crazy, to have something that's like a very solid reminder of like, people will die and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
So when you're lost in the, no, but this, and I can be prepared, and I want this, and I do, to just have this like sort of monolith of, it will happen.
Yeah.
And it happened, and you're sort of, all right.
Yeah, you got through it.
So you sort of can go, it does, I mean, it doesn't fix it, definitely doesn't fix you as a person. Definitely. You still have lots of control issues. But I think I definitely find it comforting to be like, yeah, shit's going to happen whatever I do. Whatever I go round and how many times I do this in my head or I think about this or I, you know, I try and imagine all the scenarios so I'm prepared for all of them. Shit's going
to
happen.
Yeah, and this is a very bad example because I'm not comparing a breakup to But I was in a kind of 2 year sort of, not a relationship, it was kind of like a on and off, is it, will it, blah, 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 blah. And it was such like 2 years of just constant stress and, oh, will he, oh, a text, does he love me, does he not love me? It was this whole thing. Mm. And eventually he was like, hey, I am yours. We are now together. I can see us living together. I can see us going on holiday together. You're it, we're us. And then it was like a week where I was like, oh, finally, like,
finally,
oh, relaxing and like letting down all of the guards and like, this is finally happening. And then out of fucking nowhere, he was like, oh, yeah, last Monday I fell in love with someone else.
What?
And completely blindsided me. But there was something kind of, I mean, I reacted very badly.
I don't think anyone reacts well to that situation.
No, but I kind of refused to leave his flat for 24 hours. It became very awkward.
I think that's fine. I think that's fine.
I would have still been there if hadn't had jobs. But it was, the only reason I'm comparing it is that I had spent 2 years trying to control this and trying to be prepared for whatever.
Any eventuality. Yeah.
You can never prepare yourself for someone. He couldn't even prepare himself because I've since then been like, what you know, were you just stringing me along? He was like, no, genuinely. Like, I thought it was going to be us, but then I met her. I was like, I mean, yeah. Okay. None of us could have.
Yeah, none of us could have written that.
Seen that coming.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want him, so haha. But still, it did change something in my head. Like, for a few months, I was in this very good place because I did have sort of an acceptance of,
you
know,
what
it wasn't.
You
it wasn't even like, you know, it wasn't even one of those things where all my friends had been like, well, let's see. Yeah, he seems like a bad guy. Like, everyone had been like, yes.
Yeah, this is it.
Finally, this is perfect. And it's that's the only, I don't want anyone to think that I'm, you know, comparing it to grief or anything. That's not what it is. But it was just, I can kind of connect to the feeling of, yeah, there's no, that no one could have predicted that. Yeah. And then you do go through it and you're like, oh, okay, I also didn't. The reason I tried to prepare so much for what if one day maybe was because I thought that then I would know exactly how to handle
that. Yeah, and you don't.
No one would have been prepared to.
I don't think that is a good comparison because I think that's it is that thing of like sometimes life throws you really weird shit. And there's, and you're, you know, like when you're watching a TV show and you're like, say what? That just happened? You know, like funny Game of Thrones. You're just like, no way! And that is why we enjoy those moments because it's vicariously showing us the same as our life. And life will throw you things and people will die and people will fall in love with people. And surprisingly, you sound like you, especially like you actually deal with it pretty well.
Well,
like,
I mean, 15 years in therapy will do something to someone.
Nothing wrong with it. Nothing
it
wrong
was
with
when
it.
I was really, not emo, but like a proper teenager. Yeah, and I was like, I'm super into films, like films that you probably won't have heard of.
Oh, I was the same. Me too.
I know this very underground Quentin Tarantino. You probably don't know him. He's very, very indie. Magnolia was probably one of my favorite films. There's a spoiler alert? Don't think it's a spoiler. At one point, for no reason, frogs just start falling from the sky. And some character says, sometimes that just happens. Sometimes frogs fall from the sky. And I really connected with that on some kind of teenager level of just being like, yeah, sometimes you just don't know.
What the fuck is going
what
on?
What the fuck? Sometimes things are just so... Who falls in love on a Monday?
Yeah.
Right? You can fall in love with some on a Monday?
On Monday, what the fuck is wrong with
you? What the fuck? I was not prepared for that to happen ever. I'd be less surprised if frogs fell from the sky.
Yeah. Well, Sophie, thank you so much for coming to talk to me. It was
thank you so much for having me.
Total joy. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can follow Sophie on Twitter at Sophie Hagen, and it's SOFIEHAGEN. She's also on Instagram at Sophie Hagen DK. You can also buy her book now, Happy Fat. And she's currently on tour. Head to her website, sophiehagen.com, for more information on the Bubble Wrap / Happy Fat tour, which is a stand-up and a book tour as well, and definitely worth looking at. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, and you can email thegriefcast@gmail.com. Music was provided by The Glue Ensemble, and the show was very excellently edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Productions. And remember, you are not alone.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.